SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races a little bit past the top of the hour. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And back to Brooklyn, Sid Fernando joins us from Work Thoroughbred Consultants. Of course, Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, back in the BK for you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And Pete home overnight, and he'll be back up here, and you'll be coming up next week.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, are you set up next to that shoeshine guy?
Captain Crazy? Yes.
That was just crazy last year.
He's
got into a fight.
He's a live wire.
Yeah. I mean, I kept, as I was circulating around, I kept an eye out on you because I was about to jump in.
Yeah, he seems under control right now. I think we're confident it's gonna be okay this year.
Why can't he just move I don't know. Feet over.
I don't know. It's been that's pretty much always the shoeshine stand's always been there. It's Chico, and before that, I forget who was the shine man was before Chico. That'd be a great story, actually. Because racetrack shine men are, they're a breed unto themselves. They're a source of information. They're a conduit. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Too funny. Well, we're off to a good start here. And, you know, you look at the stake winners. Obviously, Sid, we got a big 3-year-old weekend coming. We'll talk about the Haskell and the Jim Dandy and the Curlin in a minute. But in terms of recapping what we've seen already, let's touch on the amazing run that Monomoy Girl is now authoring. And single-handedly has got to be elevating Tapizar for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, Tapizar only stood for 12.5 this year at Gainesway. He needed this horse badly, and I'm happy for the farm, the horse, the connections, of course, you know, the Winchells as well. Michael Hernan at Gainesway is a co-breeder of this filly, so that's particularly satisfying for him as well. He and a partner had bought the mare in foal to Tapizar for $75,000, which seemed like a pretty stiff price, considering that the pedigree isn't, super strong, but they got this filly, and she certainly made that mare now.
I'll let you riff a little on in a minute on Tapizar and the mating. One thing that catches my eye is the presence of any ewes in here and the damn Dramette. And, here we are just a year removed from Beholder's retirement and start of her career as a broodmare. And here's Henny Hughes contributing, through a female to, in this case, another female, but that's two very notable successes for a horse that doesn't, yeah, that is otherwise unheralded.
Yeah, very much so. The one on the racetrack and now one as a broodmare. You know, it's interesting. The Henny Hughes, of course, is by Hennessy, by Stormcat. And Tappet's first really big success was Hanson by Tappet out of a Stormcat mare. So that's a Tappet Stormcat Nick right there. So this Henny Hughes mare was originally owned by Dr. Hanson. And, you know, what he was trying to do was recreate that Nick of Hanson by sending, he was probably going to breed the mare to Hanson, but when Hanson got sold to Korea, he probably went looking for another son of Tappet, found Tapazar, and the best foal for Tapazar now is a product of that same Tappet Stormcat Nick, as you mentioned, through Henny Hughes Hennessy this time. So that's an interesting thing. And what's also interesting, Steve, is that Tapazar, even though he hasn't been as successful as the farm would like, he's only had three stakes winners so far, but two out of those three stakes winners are products of this Tappet Stormcat Nick. The other one, of course, is his Tip Tap Tapazar. It was the one that won the let me just see if I have it right here. Tip Tap Tapazar won the Sapling 2 years ago when his first crop was two, and then was second in the Saratoga Special and third in the Bashford Manor. Tip Tap Tapazar is out of the Stormcat mare. Monomoy Girl is out of that Henny Hughes mare, Dramette. Henny Hughes, of course, by Hennessy Stormcat. So two out of his three stakes winners are bred on his, you know, Nick that was and is so very successful for Tappet himself.
Interesting. And, you know, you look at, I'm just looking at some of the other names too. He, Hollywood Handsome, and that Mr. Crow, that the Koreans own, Honey Bunny. Well, her exploits obviously have a ways to go yet, and Monomoy Girl, really an impressive win, and we'll see about.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, but I get the sense, and in fact, even after we talked to Brad Cox on Monday, later on in the day, his inclination was kind of confirmed to most likely Cotillion and the Distaff. So she'll march forward. Let me also take a second, and you happened to riff on Uncaptured when we were together last week. And
yeah,
that performance, I mean, not to take away from Wonder Godot last night, Monomoy Girl Sunday, Sister Charlie, or anybody else. Daddy is a Legend with a great effort, too. But Catherine the Great, to some degree, was maybe the most impressive East Coast stake winner on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, she certainly was impressive. And when we talked last week, we kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, when you go to these two-year-old races early in the meet, you're looking for, as I mentioned, cheaper stallions, cheap in the sense of stud fee, versus some of the more well-bred, some of the more well-bred fillies, you know, are getting ready at this time. She happened to beat that good filly, Candy Ride. You probably remember her name, one who ran second out of the mare, Cool Storm. Cool Storm, for example, was an $800,000 purchase or sale, depending if you were the seller or the buyer, just a couple of years ago. Massive pedigree, $800,000 mare. Candy Ride was the sire of that filly who ran second. And this uncaptured filly, Catherine the Great, of course, Nona Madeline was the filly that ran second.
Right.
Yeah, but this uncaptured filly, really did put up some kind of performance. And, we talked to Steve about, sometimes people always return to the scene of something familiar, whether it's the saying goes about a thief returns to the scene of a crime or whatnot, but we stay with the familiar. Michael Hernan, of course, buys that mare in full to a Gainsway Stallion. In this case, Catherine the Great, owned by John Oxley, and of course trained by Mark Cassie, who trains Wander Gadot. And Catherine the Great, the attraction must have been there for the duo because John Oxley owned the sire on Captured and raced him. Mark Cassie trained him. He was, I think he was the horse of the year in Canada. It's funny because this is how time flies. I happened to be at the sale, Cleveland September sale, in 2011, I believe, when Uncaptured was sold by Four Star Sales. And I was in the bar with Fatty Greathouse, who was with Bill Graham, the breeder of Uncaptured. And Uncaptured sold for a really high price. He was an exceptional looking horse, $290,000 for a lion heart. So that was a pretty big price. And I still vividly remember us talking about what a great sale it was and yada yada yada. Then the horse went on, of course, and lived up to the looks, the hype, and had a great career. Likewise, Catherine the Great sold for $170,000 OBS October, which is a heck of a price for a stallion on Captured that stands for only $6,000. So history has repeated itself here in more ways than one and for the same connections.
Before we expand on anything within the pedigree and what is happening with Uncaptured, and I also referenced Flashback last week. In fact, there's a Flashback New York bred today that's considering that two of the first six runners to hit the track for Flashback have won at First Asking, keeping an eye on that. But talk about Jack Oxley and his presence and his long-term success around the game. I mean, he's got...
Sure, yeah.
You go back to Monarcos, obviously, when it comes to the highest profile wins, but, Sky Mesa is his. Booklet was a horse of his. Classic Empire, career starting at stud, of course. And he's been one of the most consistent contributors to the bloodstock trade, and he and Debbie Oxley, they are as much a stalwart in this business as any couple.
Yeah, I've I don't know them personally, but I've just admired their success from afar. Just before I get to Jack Oxley, I just want, you asked quickly about Uncaptured and his pedigree. One thing about Uncaptured, who stands at Ocala Stud, is by Lionheart, the tail of the cat horse who was second in the Kentucky Derby, started off pretty well at Stud, and then was sent by Ashford to Turkey. Well, here's the interesting thing. He left behind a few sons at Stud. One of those was Kent Barrows, also by Lionheart. He started in Florida, of course, and he came to Hill and Dale Farm. Stone Street, of course, is the owner of that horse. So it's interesting. Lionheart got Kent Arrows, and Catherine the Great's stakes-winning half-sister, Katinka, is also by Kent Arrows. So the dam has now produced two stakes winners, both by sons of Lionheart. Is that something? Both who stood in Florida. So that's a little piece of information on that pedigree before we go to Jack Oxley. His success has been really phenomenal when you think about, and you just listed a bunch of his horses. But I mean, these horses have made a lot of money. I mean, Classic Empire, at Stud now at Ashford, Grade One winner, obviously, made $2.5 million. Monarcos, $1.7 million. He's got Dynamic Sky right now, $1.4 million. Dixie Strike, a millionaire. Noble Bird, a millionaire. Uncaptured, who we just talked about, won over $1 million. And then a bunch of horses, Steve, that made over between $500,000 to $1 million. So it's an extremely successful program. Very astute buyers. They're not afraid to pay what would be considered more than market value on the face of it. Mark Cassie has been a great part of his recent program. But before that, he John Stewart now in Kentucky, escapes my diminishing memory. But, he had Beautiful Pleasure was trained by him. John, remember his name? at any rate, he's had several really good trainers, excellent horses, and
John Ward.
John Ward, thank you so much.
And Donna will be offended if we don't say that she was.
That's right. Exactly.
Very much a part.
Yeah, the duo. Exactly.
Yes.
And Beautiful Pleasure, particularly, I think Donna really did the training. She was a big, beautiful filly, too. Beautiful Pleasure. But John Oxley, the Oxleys are, from Oklahoma. They're big philanthropists. I know they're involved with the Grayson Foundation. And he was also a well-known polo player, too.
Now we're going to get Jack on.
Are you getting Jack on?
Yeah, absolutely. We talked the other day, and he hasn't been on in a while. And I really would love for him to talk about, most notably how his approach has evolved, and that is a lesson to people that are at various stages. I had that conversation. In fact, we used it for during the best of during vacation with Watts Humphrey, and. One of the questions I asked him, I've asked Charlotte Weber this, how have you changed your approach and what is notably different about how you, you know, make decisions and expenditures and so yeah. forth, because this is an industry when it comes to the breeding habits and practices that you can't be stationary. It's an evolution, and what worked last year or 5 years ago is not necessarily going to work now. And there's a constant reevaluation, and we see it from really all elements, whether it's the breeders themselves and the ebbs and flows of standing stallions. This is a topic John Secura has riffed on with us. Whether it's the consigners and the what the high wire act of the pinhooks, there's no standing still. You got to dance to the tune that they're playing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when you see a guy, and you'll be able to talk to him about it, but when you see a guy like Jack Oxley have success as a constant, even with various different trainers, I mean, that speaks a lot to the man himself. I mean, he won the Kentucky Oaks, excuse me, with Gallon of Ruckus. He won the Kentucky Derby with Monarchos, right? John Ward horses. And now look at the success he's been having with Mark Cassidy. He's the constant right there in between all those horses. I know he's bred some, but what you might ask him, and I'd be curious, is in this evolution you're talking about, as he constantly changes, it must be his eye or his team he has or something that they're consistently able to get the right horse. And that's a skill for an owner.
Well, and he's had a very nice balance to his successes of fillies and of males. That's a kind of an interesting side note to it. I mean, there's been a very steady parade of good fillies come through for him and for Debbie, and
right.
That I think gives an operation a lot of latitude, Sid, because you can take advantage in some cases of obviously having stallions come along is the greatest resource for an operation mm-hmm. like the Oxleys, but you can keep some mares, you can cull mares and play around and mix and match, and of course, as we've discussed with Ron Winchell, obviously the obscene luxury that he has now between Gunrunner and Tappan, you adjust your broodmare band to your own personal resources.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I was just, as you were speaking, I was just looking at some of the Oxley horses, and not only do you have fillies and colts, but you have turf horses.
Yeah, classic everything. Horses,
everything, yeah. It's really phenomenal, really. Two-year-olds, older horses, Uncaptured was a two-year-old. Then you've got, some of these older horses. Perspective was a two-year-old. But you've got Noble Bird, older horse, Dynamic Sky. Turf and dirt, short and long. Classics. As I just mentioned, a Kentucky Oaks and a Derby winner. So it's a very strong program he's got.
Let's shift gears and look ahead. And Sid, touch on a couple of the known quantities going into the weekend, and the Jim Dandy will be drawn today. The Curlin set for Friday, and Hofburg right now feels like Hofburg is going to contest the Curlin, but is probably going to cross enter. I'll see what Dave Grenick, he'll typically keep us informed. Then you've got some of the refugees from the trail to the classics, horses like Reride, who took the biggest detour going to Maytan, Zing Zang, the deep closing Zing Zang for Steve Asmussen and Jackpot Ranch. He turns up in here. The interesting story that we kind of landed in our lap with Rudy Brissett a couple of weeks ago, and that is Nicodemus and what feels like a very nice HORA purchase for Rhoda and Avi Friedberg, and Larry Goichman is part of the team as well. Nicodemus, Candy Ride out of the nice Leah's Secret, and a little over $250,000 for him. And he's going to try to jump into the quarter pole here. Madison's Luna, going to go from turf to dirt for Phil Bauer and Mr. Rigney. And American Lincoln, who, once he broke his maiden, has really kind of been bubbling under the surface. So I made the case yesterday, Sid, that this Curlin is a bit of an extraneous event on a weekend that already had and has the Jim Dandy on Saturday and the Haskell on Sunday. But let's take a look at the group of three-year-olds that we're going to see run Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and get some thoughts from you on who stands at this time of year to maybe move forward a little bit and capitalize on these three-year-old exclusive opportunities.
Connect was a horse that really began his move to prominence in the Curlin. And Connect was actually by Curlin. And I think that's the lesson to really focus around when you're looking at not only the Jim Dandy, the Curlin, but the race is coming forward. It's been a contentious year for the classics. It usually is. And there's so many horses that are lightly raced or been off the trail and start to pick up. They're just stronger horses. It's a phenomenon that happens every year. And I'd be looking, Steve, at some of the horses you mentioned that are more lightly raced and weren't chewed up through the classics. As the first thing to take a look at, because the constitutions of these horses are finite, and especially through the year. Some of these horses really, and we talked about this last year too with some of these classic horses, the Derby winner, the Belmont winner, and even this year, those two horses, Taprit and the Bodymeister Colt, they were kind of squeezed dry. And it's just it's really a fact, and it's one of the things that does make, and people forget it sometimes, when you do get a really top horse like an American Pharaoh, the Secretariats, the Affirms, Seattle Sleuths, that win a Triple Crown and then continue to go forward. Inevitably, they've all lost fairly quickly after their Triple Crown effects. So that tells you right there that even the most, the strongest of the breed, so to speak, those Triple Crown winners, they all lost. And then they rebounded. But when you just get an average classic winner or a horse that's been through the classics, the drop-off is a lot bigger. And so it sets the stage for their diminishing form going up against some horses that look like, you know, they might not be on the same playing field. But those are that latter group frequently tends to be the horses that improve through the second part. If you get a really good horse, and a horse like Hofburg, by the way, he's got every light. He's lightly raised. He's with the right trainer. He's got the great pedigree. He's the type of horse that, you know, possibly becomes a big name through the second half. It's quite likely that, you know, Justify is not going to run again. He took all the classics. And, you know, you're looking right now for that profile, I would say.
Agreed, and there's been, you know, right from the winter announcement, really, when Hofburg, you know, touted himself, you know, debuting as a 3-year-old and winning well at Gulfstream and then the subsequent performance behind Audible in the Florida mm-hmm. Derby. So there's been that whole MO. I mean, knowing that Bill Mott, Garrett O'Rourke, the Judd Mont team, that they, for them to compete in Derby and Belmont with a horse with 3 starts going into the classic season, that said a lot. And he acquitted exactly. himself well. I mean, you could tell that this was a horse that was only going to really get better. And so the time is now. And it's funny that they choose this spot if they do. I mean, there's a chance, depending on the field size that they'll draw today for mm-hmm. the Jim Dandy, that they run there. But it is kind of funny that they would be conservative potentially this week
now.
When they've been, exactly. When they were so aggressive in the spring. Mm-hmm. And of course the big, you know, the Travers, not to take away from the Jim Dandy or the Haskell, but the Travers is, you know, with one horse having swept the Triple Crown and monopolized the classic titles, the Travers is the big prize.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Steve, very good point that Judmont and Mott are not the types that would throw a horse into the deep end. They felt they had enough bottom on this horse, even though he only had 2 starts before he ran a good second in the Florida Derby. And, you know, so he went into the Kentucky Derby with only 3 starts under his belt. They did the right thing, kept him out of the Preakness. Came back into Belmont because he's a Tappet. Belmont, they're synonymous, right? And ran a really good race to run third, considering everything. So he's kind of poised to exploit the second half, and he's also really bred well. He's by Tappet out of the very good Touch Gold mare, Soothing Touch.
Emollient, the dam Emollient, of the daughter, exactly. of, or daughter of.
She's a 1.25 mile winner herself. To me, this horse, you know, he's got Travers written all over him.
Well, we're also going to get on Sunday, let's glance to the Good Magic, of course, headlining the Haskell, Bravazo. Core right. Beliefs, Roaming Union, Navy Commander, Lone Sailor, who is another that feels like he's knocking on the door. And we'll see about Mr. Freeze. We've got Dale Romans probably competing at both Saratoga Saturday, Promises Fulfilled, and then at Oceanport. And mm-hmm. we'll see about a couple of others that might jump in. And Pat McBurney, something tells me he'll not participate with Golden Brown, but we'll see. So We got Haskell. And, of course, when it comes to Jim Dandy, the just discussed Jack Oxley, Flame Away, Sporting
right.
Chance as yeah. well, Tenfold, Vino Rosso, and maybe Promises Fulfilled, part of your Jim Dandy lineup. And there's your three-year-old weekend.
Yeah, and a lot of these were, you know, Good Magic kind of reminds you of Jack Oxley's the pioneer that I called from last year, the one we just talked about, the champion two-year-old the year before.
Classic Empire.
Sort of has that kind of profile, you know, champion two-year-old came back at three. He's run, you know, two very good races. It's possible that, you know, Chad really didn't want to run him back in the Preakness, but with the ownership group, which is Stone Street, as well as E5 Racing, with the second in the Derby, how could you not run back in the Preakness? So they, you know, they made that decision. And of course, there was some acrimony afterwards, the ride and all that. But you know, he's been kept fresh since then. You know, he's by Curlin, and he's got every right to. If he hasn't been squeezed too much, he's got every right to. Continue forward. He's a horse that's probably going to end up at Hillendale, where Curlin stands right now. He's one horse that perhaps, you know, might be a horse that can withstand that spring campaign.
Should be plenty to talk about next Wednesday, Sid. Looking forward to the weekend. This is going to be all right.
Absolutely. And by the way, I meant to tell you that there was some news. You might, while you were on the air, you might have missed it. Sheikh Mohammed put out a notice today that the Breeders' Cup, I mean the Dubai World Cup, purse money has been increased to $35 million for the card, and the big race is now $12 million.
Yeah, well, we'll hear from Pegasus in about 8 minutes.
And
the salvos.
That's right. And don't forget the Saudi race in February, where they're talking about like a $10 million race too. So you're going to have January, February, and March with, you know, three consecutive races with 10-plus million value. So that's going to change the landscape in terms of management, especially of older horses, you know. So it's going to be interesting. In this, the theme of your constantly evolving the evolution of the game, the owners, the methods, well, throw this into it, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we only have to look at California Chrome and Arrogate and Gunrunner to see the effects and the adjustment. And really, I mean, the World Cup had that influence, initiated that influence with its origin and Cigar and Silver Charm and whoever else you want to look at. Sid, outstanding.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely, Steve. I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. You can see Sid at the sale, Saratoga Select Yearling Sale coming up. Can't believe it, but right after Whitney, we're getting close. Amazing how quickly things are moving already. Back after this, we're going to go to New Jersey. Far Hills, Guy Torsiglieri, big news yesterday. The deal is in place and all the equipment's in place, and there's going to be parimutuel wagering, and God knows. This is a great
moment for a guy who has fought for it for ages. We'll talk to him next, and then Marshall Graham joins us and Seth Merrow to talk about the pick six. There are scratches and changes up. I'll send the link out right now. In fact, I just did. And Shallon came out of the honorable miss. So now there's even less speed. I'm going to have to reevaluate, just like we talked with Pete. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races and talk about right action, all the dots on the T's and dots on the I's and the crosses on the T's and the fiber optic cable in the ground and the personnel behind the windows. It's all come together. And after any number of false starts and frustrations, Guy Torsiglieri and the Far Hills race meeting October 20th this year in beautiful Bedminster and Parimutuel Wagering will be there. It will greet you and welcome your interest. We welcome Guy Torsiglieri and say congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a long road. We didn't really realize how difficult it was with all the technology and the infrastructure that was needed. But as I told somebody the other day, it's a 300-acre farm out in the middle of the fields and so forth. So it took quite a while to get everything set up.
And there was also some legalities that needed to be done, and that was hurdled and came together, and you had some host those that are familiar with the hosting system in Parimutuel Wagering and state the way
the various meet that is running and so forth. Is the host track for the signals? There's those kinds of things involved. Was there any one thing that fell down today or yesterday that made it all possible?
No, it was just a series of events. And my partner, Ron Kennedy, who's an engineer, is very, very good at analyzing everything. And we, it took quite a while. You know, Trenton passed the law several years ago. We thought that was going to be the easy part. But then we started working with Monmouth Park and Dennis Drazen because they gave, it's a one-day or two-day license off-site where Monmouth Park can host a race meet in an off-site location. That's the way the law is written. So we were working with Dennis and Monmouth Park, and then we have, well, as you said, the simulcasting and the signaling and the switching, and everything's got to run through Laurel and then Mount Laurel, and then it's amazing the amount of technology that it takes to pull off parametric wagering. And so with a lot of planning, Bill Moth was great to Monmouth Park. We were able to get a rock and roll.
you told Matt Hegarty that.
Hello?
Yeah, you got us?
Yep, I'm here.
There we go. You told Matt Hegarty, Guy, that you expect to have about 60 windows. And, of course, for those that have only – I sent out a picture yesterday as part of my link to the press release. And for those that aren't familiar, there's an infield installation to set up windows, and then there's the hill. And in terms of 60 parimutuel tellers, and I suppose you could even set up, you know, self-service machines, how do you envision, you know, the distribution, and have you sat down and put pencil to paper to estimate what 30 or 40,000 people would bet on the six races?
Yeah, so we don't have a clue how much they're going to wager, right? So it's going to be interesting, but we want them to have a great experience. So we're going to have tellers in the infield. We're going to have tellers around the tower. We're going to have tellers at the top of the hill. And then on the backstretch, there's corporate tents in the backstretch. We'll have tellers there as well. And then we've already gotten inquiries from our corporate tent holders. And we have a thing called the Chairman's Pavilion, which is a real high-end exclusive area next to the paddock. We'll have private tellers in that facility. And so we need to make sure that we don't have real long lines. We need to make sure we're gonna, on our website, we've started to publish Betting 101 to try to educate the fans on how to bet on the races and so forth. So it's going to be a learning experience for all of us, and hopefully it'll be a great experience.
How about the distribution of the signal, you know, most notably to the UK? And you got to figure, you know, particularly with the participation you get, Willie Mullins and any other big jump outfits, the handle from there, and not to mention the fact that Jersey, you know, does already have Betfair operating. You know, the in-race wagering should offer, you know, a lot of potential, and the signal export could most likely exceed even the domestic action.
Yeah, that's another exciting part. You know, we've had five or six European trainers already calling our NSA office, planning on shipping over. So we'll have at least, I would think, five imports for the race. It's 450,000, as you know, this year. Headed toward 500 for our 100th anniversary, which is in 2 years. So, you know, we had a tremendous amount of participation on the live streaming, watching it last year. We had, you know, Europeans come over with fistfuls of cash, you know, in total shock last year, you know, not being able to find a window or someone to take their bets. So I think there is a lot of pent-up demand that we're going to be hopefully very, very happy with.
Well, you've worked so hard to make this happen, and in fact, yesterday I alluded to your visit today, and you know, Bill Gallo and I were talking about the start of the meet here at Saratoga, and of course the first race of the of the steeplechase calendar at the spot today, the Kaiser, and then tomorrow the AP Smithwick. But, you know, Bill obviously thrilled and what this can do for you and in terms of contribution to the funding of purses and, you know, just the building of the event, obviously a milestone, a guy for you and the Far Hills Race Meeting. Just delighted with this.
Yeah, we're happy for it. You know, from a jump racing perspective, and as president of the National Steeplechase Association, you know, every race meet, big or small, is critical to our sport and our business model. And we just, you know, we embrace the big ones, the medium ones, and the small ones. And even, you know, for everything Martin Pants has done for us up here at Saratoga, we really appreciate the opportunities he gives us to race up here. And it's a wonderful sport, and we're just happy to be here and happy to keep growing it.
Well, and happy to assist in any way in that growth plan and in the progress. And this was a number of years in coming. So for those of you that, if you ever stayed away for whatever reason from Far Hills because you didn't want to mess with the bookmakers, the some of that social wagering that goes on, this is your year to come to Far Hills. And Guy, we'll see you here. When are you coming up?
I'm here.
Oh, you're good. I didn't realize. Okay.
I'll see you in about half an hour.
There you go. All right. Guy Torsalieri, everybody. And you can follow Far Hills on Twitter. And you go to farhillsrace.com or .org. Now I'm going to have to check. It's Far Hills Race, I know, on Twitter. But on the website, if you want to plan your, yeah, it is .org, farhillsrace.org, and you plan your visit. And I can tell you, if you've never been, you'll be just astounded at what goes on. It is one of the great days anywhere in American race gatherings. We'll take a timeout, and when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Marshall Graham. And Marshall, of course, 10 Strike Racing is one of his outlets as a fan of the game and somebody contributing to the roster of an inventory of horses and operates almost nationwide. But it's his capacity as an economics professor, in particular, Rhodes College, that we're going to utilize his insights, his concerns, and his attention draw to breakage, the onerous elements of breakage, has been really on display throughout the Triple Crown season. And we're going to talk to Marshall about the benefits and how it can contribute to churn. And just really, in a lot of ways, it's just fairness. I mean, you've heard Steve Crist with us on the show over the years about it. Chris, of course, the most visible and prominent advocate that, you know, made a specific contribution in this arena when he got New York to change breakage. That was in his time at NYRA. But with Steve kind of on the sidelines, it's up to Marshall and people like him and all of us to do what we did in assisting NTRA getting the withholding tax rules changed. And this could have that same, might not be as impactful or as enormous, but it's big and it can't hurt, as we like to say. Back after this, Marshall Graham, Truxton Stables on Twitter, joins us next. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.